Alright, time for another Do Not God. Google is evil. DoNotGod.com. Google is evil video presentation. Very smooth. Anyway, so I think I will attempt to write a proof. Yes, proving that, you know, life just isn't unviable as a theoretical concept, as an idea, as a plan. As I've stated, it couldn't survive an environmental impact statement. I mean, you couldn't, if you were going to say, I'm going to make life, and you proposed it to a reasonable person who had to scrutinize it, you know, and it was their job to, you know, figure out whether it works or not, they'd say, no, you can't do that. Okay, it's like dumping toxic waste in a lake or something. You just, no, you're not going to get a permit to do that. Way too dangerous, way too messy, way too sloppy, blah, blah. So as it is formed now. Now, maybe if you have some theoretical notion that you're going to create some virtual life in a virtual environment that's all controlled and pretty and happy, you might get away with it. But I think even still, a smart person would realize that the whole thing is sort of based on first creating negatives and then fixing them with positives. That the initial, you know, the food, the energy you have to put into the game is purely negative. And the only thing positive is just pushing the negative, you know, out of its space kind of thing. So that's one of the arguments to be made. On the other channel, I started thinking about how you prove things to people, and so I just came up with this little short list of how you establish a proof. And for me, it's just about a trial. You know, it's the same kind of standard. That's about as serious as we can get, you know, in terms of trying to figure out whether somebody's guilty of something, and, you know, high crime, and, you know, where the high stakes are kind of high. And, you know, you have this obligation to try to do it right, try to get the right answer. And we should have the same standard for figuring out whether you should have kids, or whether lots of, you know, questions you ask about your own life. We should be applying kind of serious scrutiny, because the fact is, you know, people will be impacted, and some of them will be impacted in dramatically negative ways. You know, they'll pay high prices for your actions. And so it's all kind of serious business. And yes, nobody takes it very seriously, because it's not very much fun to take it seriously. It's angst provoking, you know, to make it serious, you know, to consider all the liabilities and what your reaction to them would be and all that kind of crap. It's negative and the sense it's not going to be fun, and it's tedious and difficult, and it just doesn't provoke any positive feelings. And so that's part of why this argument's hard to even make, is because who wants to, you know, when they're busy, you know, eating their snacks, it's not snack attainment, you know, it's not the kind of stuff you you gravitate to, you know, as a self-absorbed, self-interested organism. You know, why do the stuff that's no fun? So you have to have this sense of obligation, you have to have a feeling of guilt, and you have to have a bunch of negative things to provoke you to do the positive thing, which is take it seriously. So, you know, it's just more evidence for the argument is even talking about what evidence is. But anyway, so proving beyond a reasonable doubt, that seems, you know, it's a reasonable standard, right? You know, and then it just becomes a debate about what is a reasonable belief and a reasonable standard, you know. And that's a problem. So we can't even really agree on what the boundaries of reasonable is. You could argue that, you know, I would argue that on its face, somebody who says they believe in something because they have faith in it Well, they've already basically said I'm unreasonable because it's the definition of the term is belief without good reason. So forget it. You're not gonna be able to play the game. So anyway, it's just really about arguing the evidence, okay, the physical facts, so we can find some of those, and then you just apply logic. And what is applying logic is it's just putting the facts together, and when you put two facts together, they already look like a third fact. They kind of do it for you. They, you know, logic is just going where the facts go. So there's lots of metaphors for that, I suppose. You could say that the facts connect and they make an arrow, and the arrow points to another fact. So, you know, there's lots of ways of understanding that facts in and of themselves have, you know, value as information. So you could call them, you know, another metaphor would be bits of information, and those bits are like 2 + 2 = 4. They just, you know, a fact has a two-ness to it, another fact might have three-ness to it, and they just add up to five-ness. So that's, you know, it's not much of a start. So I figured I'll just make this video as part of the rewriting and thinking through the good arguments. So the first argument you make is that, well, if I'm going to say something like proving life is a blight, well, obviously you have to understand what the word blight is, right? So it's basically saying it's more negative than positive, more bad than good. It's insufficiently efficient. You could say that, right? Get technical. So all that's going to have to be in here somewhere. Like every word is going to have to be carefully defined, because you can't do any of this logic stuff if you're not a little bit careful about words actually meaning what they seem to mean to you. They need to mean to other people you're talking to, or the language doesn't even work. So a blight is a specific kind of thing. You could argue that it's not really applicable to something that's not a virus or a fungus or some kind of thing like that. Very specific definition. Some threat, right? So, I mean, saying life is a threat to life is, you know, okay, it's probably is logically sound, but it doesn't sound right, you know. So that's another thing that would have to be fixed. So anyway, it's just basically saying life is unproductive. It's a zero-sum game. The best you can do is nothing, you know, get back to zero. So that sort of gets to the first, you know, the biggest antinatalism arguments, let's say, or the biggest anti-life argument of recent time that was very specific is the Benatar asymmetry argument, again, which is really just pointing out how it's really just made out of negatives. If you want to do anything positive, it's just basically getting rid of a negative. So if you can find some negative thing and you push it off the screen, you've done a good. And that there really isn't any room for anything called an intrinsic good, some sort of good that you could do that doesn't have some prevent bad in it. Okay, so you can't really find a glass of pure good, all right, to say, well, let's just make the pure good and we won't worry about the bad. We'll just make so much pure good that there won't be any bad. All right, so this gets to almost trivial arguments about the power of the orgasm or something. Like, that's all that you need, one orgasm, and boy, you're sold. You'll just do anything for that feeling, right? You'll just chase it across the entire universe. You'll endure any desert, you'll endure any hardship, you know, to have your moment. You know, it's trivial, you know, in terms of an argument, but you can't deny it's a powerful sensation. But what is it really? Is it really anything more than a aggrandized sneeze? You know, you rebooted your computer for a minute. Your brain reboots, It frees you of all your burdens, all of the text that you have to read and all the bullshit and all the crap just goes away and quits harassing you. All your little worries and all your little underlying inferiorities and all your whatevers, all your psychology, all the crap, all the physiology just goes to a wonderful blankness that feels like a great sense of relief, a great popping of the pimple. Again, that's how it actually, frankly, as someone who's experienced a few, that's that's all you're getting out of it. Okay, is a little moment of relief. So even that good, okay, the most joyous of sensations, is tainted. It's not pure, okay? It's not a nice clean glass of clear good. It clearly has an element in it that seems tainted by, you're just undoing negatives. You're just getting rid of all your burdens, then they're slowly just creep right back in again, and you go back to, and that might even be before you look at who you're in bed with, and then really say, whoa, what the hell was I thinking? No, it's not really my life experience, frankly. I don't even think I ever had drunken sex, frankly. No, never. Anyway, not an important detail. That probably won't be in the book. all right, so another part of arguing is the other person's argument, right? So you go to court, and what do? You're basically saying, well, that other guy's going to make an argument, and I have to make the counter-argument. So, I mean, my counter-argument can be a whole different theory, or it can just be, ooh, your evidence sucks. You don't have any. Your theory sucks. So, part of this argument is going to be, well, what's the alternative to life as a blight? I mean, I heard as a kid, the gift thing. The gift of life. What? Yeah. I mean, there's so many strings, so many liabilities, so much crap to this gift. It's like giving somebody a car lease. It's really expensive. They didn't pay anything down. They're just giving you a burden. They're handing you something that will, cost you more to get out of the contract. It's just a liability, in a lot of ways. It's a bomb, at any minute can go off in some horrible way. You can't call this a gift. It's just too poisonous. It's too diseased. It's too covered with COVID. It's just not reasonable. So it's not a reasonable theory that life is a gift. So you have to accept that, what I'm going to give you is something that's very dangerous and blighty and full of, lots of strings attached. So what else could it be called? A presumptively positive, hopeful thing? I'm giving you a hope? what could be life called other than that? All right, so that's probably part of the thing to figure out, what's the appropriate description, that isn't tainted with, completely unreasonable definition. I mean, gift just can't work. That just can't work is the right word. So what is the right word for the person who thinks it's redeeming? That in some way more people will profit in a substantial enough way, that is, you'll cure enough disease that it's okay that there was a few victims who had to die for the cure. You can make that argument that it's okay to kill one person to save 10 people from the same fate. Torture one person to get 10 people off of a torture table. Those kind of arguments could be made, but is that life affirming or is that something else? So, I mean, if you're going to make the argument that somehow the happy people make up for the sad people, you know, that is not sort of cheating. Because, you know, the argument could be made that you're just using the slaves, you're using the victims as fodder for the creation of the unnecessary winners. So you're making unnecessary winners at the cost of actual and real losers. So then you get into the argument about there's two things to argue here. There's the current condition, and then there's the future condition. And the cure for the future is simpler than the cure for the present. You know, it's a lot easier to prevent malaria in the future. I mean, it's a simpler choice. It's a pure winner if you can do it, rather than attempting to cure it in the present. You know, the victims that have it now. So it's one task is harder than the other task in a way. It's a harder decision. So if you don't make the 10 people being tortured, then you don't need to use the one person to be tortured to save the 10 people from their torture. So you could argue that the people in the future who are going to be happy are going to be happy at this expense. But do the people in the future need to be happy? So that's one of the arguments to be made. Is there any real need? That is there any vital thing that needs to be accomplished by people redundantly doing this living thing? I mean, even though the technology gets better and life gets richer, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, does it get, you can say that, you know, people 2,000 years ago had these kind of conversations about what the meaning of their existence was, and in some respects they were, you know, the intellectuals of that time were at least much more, there was much more integrity to their conversation than you could argue the average educated person now, who seems kind of silly and trivial by comparison, in how they process information. you know, they just say whatever Starbucks says. You know, if Starbucks says so, okay. Google, you know, they just ask Google, you know, what's the truth, Google? Big mistake. You know, it's not going to work. All right, so you have the did I apply? Yes, yeah, so I don't really, you probably don't need this little bit of trivial stuff, because it is sort of just trivial, but yeah, it's just, you're just arguing the facts. And so what are the facts of our life? So we can't really argue those decisively. So in some ways we have to accept certain things people are going to say, like there is a God or whatever. And you say, okay, well, even if there is a God, I'll still argue that you're still in the same dilemma. Because even God is creating a winner and loser game. And the fact is that, you know, if you have kids, there's every probability your kid will spend eternity in hell because God's standards are so frickin' high, right? Or they could be. They could be a lot higher than you believe, right? You could be some lazy Catholic, you know, who doesn't take things too seriously. Well, what if that isn't what God wants? What if that isn't the game God's playing? Okay, maybe if you're playing the wrong game. And the standards are higher. You can't just make excuses forever. You know, that as much as you think, well, it's just about being baptized, and then at least some few minutes before you're actually dead, you just have to say, I'm sorry, and everything's okay. Well, isn't God going to know you're playing that game? I mean, isn't he going to know that, oh, you're just doing it because you're afraid? Oh, well, that's not good enough. Repenting actually has something to do with actual repent, and repenters aren't likely to make the same mistake twice. So if you're, you know, if this is 3 strikes for you, or 17 strikes, or 764 strikes, I mean, every week you're doing this confession thing and confessing to the same crimes, well, you think your God is going to be fooled? Well, anyway, so the point is that they could be very high standards. You don't even know that. And you want to sentence somebody to eternity in hell? I mean, that's what you're doing as a practical fact, because you know you're not going to be able to control its maturation. Come on, you have no facts to give you any indication that children come out just like their parents, that they're little robotic versions of their parents' philosophy. They don't even look like their parents, and, you know, as little as they sometimes look like their parents, they think like their parents even less. So, you know that's not going to work. You can't go in presuming you're going to create people that are going to be immune to these deficits in their function, that are going to cause them to be horrendously tortured forever. Okay. So, I mean, the Bible thing almost gives a better weapon, because you could argue, I could quote a couple of, the born-againers who admit that if there's no God, they wouldn't want to live. They certainly wouldn't have kids. Yeah, so they're admitting basically the argument that without their fake notion of a fake reality, that their brain is somehow, their soul is going somewhere, whatever that is, they would find it appalling and horrid that this is our condition. And then the fact that so many people on Earth aren't breeding, 50% of the people aren't going to have kids, so that's a positive, very positive number. Now, obviously, they probably don't have philosophies that are entirely consistent with that. They're not having them for lots of personal reasons, selfish reasons, because it's expensive and all the other kind of stuff. But I'm sure some of them just don't want the liability. That they understand it's not a controllable game, and they don't want to subject themselves to paying the price for daydreaming or hoping and not being realistic about what their prospects are. And it's a pretty bleak looking future, frankly. There's lots of warning signs about the brick wall coming, Lots of things to be damn worried about if you're thinking about living for another 100 years. There's some scary bits out there, that really, hard to construct a picture of how it's all going to work out. In some ways, the argument, is... the grains of it are already in people, in the sense that there are people who recognize, they certainly don't recognize any obligation, like, oh, what a terrible crime I'm committing not producing another human being to go through this slop. So the very fact that they figured out that this is, work, not, that it's not a pure glass of good, and that, they would feel some obligation if this really was rescuing something, you were taking something and rescuing it with your effort to have kids, taking things from a bad place and putting them in a good place. Well, yeah, they would, they wouldn't be fulfilling their obligation to, put some money in that jar to, help save the Martians or something. And they're clearly not seeing it that way. They're not seeing it as a terrible unfairness that they have denied their potential spawn from, banging around in this ugly maze. I should try to reduce the amount of times I do something like ugly maze, because then I'm projecting a conclusion. And the idea is to get to those conclusions, not to state them. I can't call the defendant the mass murderer until I prove him to be one, and such. So it would be one of the rules of the argument, is not to use your conclusions in your argument. Okay, so I'll try to reduce the amount of that. Anyway, take a break here and see where else it goes. So this is basically a video to help myself improve that rather meager beginning. All right, so the idea is to prove that life is more It's more bad than good. It's a negative occurrence on Earth, not a positive one. That it has been too expensive would be a simple way to say it, I think. Insufficiently efficient. The rest of it's just going to be the trial. What are the facts? I mean, I think it can be proven that, you know, we evolved. I think lots of things that can be proven, and that evolution works a certain way, and it has this insane amount of attrition associated with it, and that all these other animals are also experiencing quite substantial reward and punishment experience here on Earth. They are, slaves being driven by feelings just like we are, and there's lots of vulnerability there, lots of holocausting taking place that, you know, we as the bus driver, as the biggest brain on the bus, we have the obligation, all right, if the bus isn't being driven well, to fix it, to correct the oversteering and the sloppy navigation, because we have the brains to do it. We have the brains to fix what's broken, and because we have those capacity to fix it, we have the obligation to fix it. Those kind of arguments. All right, I'll be back. All right, so I had a couple of thoughts. I mean, one of the thoughts is just the idea of what you're arguing with. So you could argue that making an argument, half the argument is being minimally literate, coherent in how you order your argument and all that crap. What's the minimum amount of, it's like somebody who speaks a broken English. There's a minimum amount of quality that needs to exist for somebody to understand what's being said, what's being communicated. So you have to have some minimum amount of articulateness in how you present an argument. And then there's the opposite side, is just who's receiving the argument. So the dumber the receiver is, okay, the less they're capable of getting the fact that they used a wrong word in a sentence, or it's not exactly what they meant to say, and they can figure out what they actually meant to say. They can solve the puzzle of the poor articulation of the argument. somebody can say, life is suffering. Yeah, it's not a very big statement. It's a little bit ambiguous, and imprecise. Somebody smart can understand that and say, okay, I'll take it for, that life has this component of suffering that isn't justified by some other component of unsuffering or anti-suffering or something capable of doing anything about the suffering. As a price, there's not a sufficient compensation for the purchase price. The product isn't worth it. So they could take the simple statement and turn it into a "it's not worth it" statement, or a "it's not good enough" statement, or some other statement. And then there's the moron who just reacts, without anything much else stated except I find that offensive. Okay, why? Well, because I'm a religious nut. I mean, becomes the answer or something like that. Because I have a conception of reality that I'm attached to, and I don't want to hear about any flaws. So you could sort of say it ends up being the communism capitalism argument. That there's all kinds of shades of something else, something less blue and something less red. There's all kinds of places, the purple or places to be, that are perfectly, and I would say more legitimate. The two extremes are retarded. Capitalism is always good, it's stupid. Communism, socialize everything, is a great idea, is stupid. Or communalism, where the idea becomes everything is child safe and everything is gruel. You know, I mean, everything is made out of something unoffensive to any member of the commune. You know, no member of the commune can be offended, therefore nothing can happen. You can't do anything. So those extremes are bullshit. And, you know, the real argument should be somewhere, you know, in between those extremes. The wackos, the people, so I could argue on my own side. I mean, on the people who, there's people who are anti-life, because their personal life, has them full of a contempt and hate and, despise. And they just can't see past that to say, well, what if I wasn't afflicted? What if I wasn't blind? Or what if I wasn't this? Or wasn't some thing, some affliction that has tainted their view of, you know, what life could have been if they weren't ugly or some other stupid thing that they're pissed off about. And that's not a great reason to be anti-life. I mean, it's, you know, it's going to lead you just to conclusions that are correct about how it's just not good enough because you're experiencing the price being paid. But the fact that you're experiencing the price being paid isn't the complete argument. It's not making the argument of why the imposition wasn't fair or right, and that even your torture isn't worth it. That no, a million other happy people don't make up for the price you pay. Now, that might be a right argument, but that's the right argument you have to make. You can't just make the argument, I hate you. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. But you see a lot more, it's a lot worse, I would argue, for the people defending the capitalism kind of thing, the greed thing, the, you know, it's just about me. All of those arguments are so superficial and stupid that, you know, they can't be given, that it's hard to even concede that I have some obligation to explain why, you know, that's insanely stupid, that works, that's the plan, and the plan doesn't have to go any further than that, because, you know, I can just point out all the obvious inefficiencies that are created by monopolies and all the other crap that capitalism breeds. But anyway, like Google, for example, just about, you know, it's the blueprint of the most evil form of capitalism, in the sense that they maliciously and deliberately tricked people by looking like they were communists, right? They gave it all away for free, right? They pretended that, look, this is so easy to do and we can give it away for free. And all those evil companies that are putting ads on their websites, you know, the search engine companies that are trying to make a living, you know, they actually have to make a living. We don't have to because we have venture capitalists funding us. And so we'll just give it away for free until they're all out of business. And then we'll be the only person left. And it also killed all investment in search engine research and development because nobody would invest in any other technology under the circumstance where they knew they weren't going to have any future because Google had already established itself as the monopoly. And so it's the most insidious kind of progress reduction. It destroys the incentive to develop and innovate because there's no capacity to, there's little prospect of regaining the territory that Google has taken. I mean, once the French guy takes France and says, France is me, king whoever, it's pretty hard to take it from him because he establishes an army and establishes a bunch of barriers to a fair fight. Some little guy can't come along and say France is now Germany or something, you know, without paying a huge price. Anyway, I didn't want to get into that argument, but it's really about who you're arguing with, right? So that's half the argument is who are you attempting to communicate with? So the scenario I was thinking about, the little test you have to give the the jury is, you know, there's little questions you could ask to kind of get to their character. So I could ask the question, you know, if there was a little green button and all you had to do was hit the little green button and you initiate life on Earth. And let's say, I mean, life on Mars. And let's say the condition is that it does include a sentient organism. So there is a mouse. Okay. So it's Mars with just the highest form of life will be a mouse. Kind of comparable to ocean life, which never got further than the shark, you know, the octopus. You know, the ocean didn't produce anything smarter than that. You know, and all the time it's had to, you know, it's had a longer time to evolve. There is some, well, no, anyway. No, we'll just keep moving on. We'll get lost in an evolution argument. But let's just make it so, okay, because some people might realize that if I propose putting life on Mars and it's just robotic life, that is brainless life, you know, just, you know, clams and lower, it's not very much of a threat that it's going to turn into anything. You could go a step lower and just say without neurons. So just living things that don't have a neuron. And what's the chances of the neuron being developed? You know, and it's pretty slim, frankly. So the chance of having brain-enabled organisms is pretty thin. And so you could say that, okay, somebody could say, all right, I'll hit that button. Who cares? But if I put sentient life on it, well, then we know at least what we're playing for. And so it's an interesting question, right? I think most people, right? Now, if I say you have to choose now, press the button or don't press the button. You got 10 seconds. Yeah. There's going to be some idiots who will press the button. Okay. And those are the ones you really want to try to understand, because you got to understand, well, why are you taking this so unseriously? Why are you saying because they just said so, you have 10 minutes or 10 seconds? You know, don't you want to think about this one? Don't you want to know more details than you can know in 10 seconds? Come on. It's kind of serious, isn't it? I mean, how are the mice going to live? And what are they living on? And, well, you know. And then you just have the prospect of they can evolve into almost anything. Almost anything. I mean, who knows where it can go? You know, if we actually did it. You know, and you can't undo it. Let's just say that's, you know, one of the rules is that once you started, you can't stop it. We don't get to go over there and wipe it all out. So there's no eraser, possible. See, that one's, you know, you can say, see, that's another part of it that makes it hard to make arguments sometimes, is that we can imagine beyond reality, you know, beyond the container that actual reality is in, you know, and, you know, so, you know, it's pretty hard to establish, okay, here's the catch, you know, when, you know, well, I could undo that catch. I mean, that catch is, I mean, we could nuke it. There's lots of ways we could end it. So, you know, that's just bullshit to say we can't. It's not believable. Even though I say it's the condition, you say, who's imposing the condition? The Russians? I mean, yeah. Anyway. All right. But anyway, so I would speculate that most people, you know, if there was another button that says you can have another 10 minutes to think about it, they'd hit that button. You know, they'd say, yeah, give me the extra 10 minutes. I want to think about this. You know, why am I doing this? I mean, what's my incentive? You know, what am I getting? Let me think about it. Will this in some way impact my life? Like, will I have to pay more for bread because, you know, we have to send bread to... Why the hell did I look at my watch? I never wear a watch, ever. I try it now and then. Every now and then, I used to put a watch on just to see if it would work, and it just never worked. Anyway, it always felt like there was a thing. You know, I just never felt natural. Anyway... Oh, natural, isn't that a terrible word for me to use? It never felt comfortable. Yeah. Anyway, so back to the story. Right, so yes, people would want more time. And then, you know, the button could just keep doing that. Another, you want another 10 minutes? Yeah, sure, I want another 10 minutes. Give me, can I get 10 weeks? Can I have somebody just keep pressing the take your time button? Because, yeah, I'm not ready to hit this button. And that would be an acknowledgement. I think most people would acknowledge this isn't just a trivial thing you're doing. It's not a trivial thing. Sentient life, you know. And, you know, I could make it kittens, you know, I could cats, you know, covered in cats. And sure, then some people are going to say, well, what are they going to, where do they live and how do they live and where do they live on? And, you know, what's the attrition rate? You know, maybe they'd want to know more information. But again, it should also be part of the thing. If they take any time to think about it, they should be informed that, yes, this can evolve into anything. You know, any kind of horrible circumstance, you know, where the cats just end up being python food, you know, that they end up just being prey animals rather than predators, you know, that they're all eventually annihilated by, you know, a virus, you know, all kinds of, you know, and then the planet's just covered with, you know, snakes that eat snakes or something. Then you're going to feel proud of that accomplishment. Oh, look at the wonderful planet I made. Yuck. All right, well, anyway, the point I'm getting to is that there's ways to acquire some information about, again, who the jury is. Because, frankly, that's who you're talking to. Who am I trying to convince? And what are the barriers? And what argument needs to be made to them? Because they have some pre-existing notion of reality that just gets in the way of ever accepting that this is serious business. I mean, they might be a nihilist, or they might be a religious kook, or they just might be some kind of silly optimist. See, that just brought something to mind. I said silly optimist, and, you know, the other day, it was yesterday, actually, I think. The day before. All right, so some moron's driving down the street in his crap car, whatever his, you know, his Dickenstender, okay, and he's playing some sort of, like, Mexican reggae. I don't know what the hell it is, but out of, like, 500-watt speakers on his car. You know, it's just blaringly loud, louder than a fire engine, just blaringly loud. And there's some dude on the street walking. And he's kind of, you know, a reefer guy, you know, he's got the hair, you know, you know, could have been, you know, just the Marley walk, the Marley, he's just Marleyed, he's Marleyed all over the place. And he starts dancing in the street. And, you know, giving the guy the thumbs up, you know, and you're just like, no, you give the guy the fucking finger, okay, you maybe even throw a fucking rock. I mean, I know I can't say that, but. Fuck this cunt. I mean, you know, we should have, you know, the road should have trap doors in it. You know. I mean, you know, there's nothing justifiable in this behavior. Just nothing. And, you know, nothing defendable. There's no, at trial, there's no argument this cunt could make. Except, I wish to impose on everybody. I wish to rape their senses. Okay, with my dick. And that's all he's saying, overtly. Is that that's what I live for, is to rape people. To impose on them. The whole reason I'm doing it is to impose on them. I'm not doing it for any other purpose. But to he's probably wearing earplugs. You know. Any gun will do. I mean, these are people that just shouldn't fucking be among civilized people, right? And it's like, you know, and then you see the news with the homeless people and they're all nuts and crazy and they just leave them on the fucking street. You know, the news reporter walks up to them. Do you want some help? And they're like, fuck you, bitch. You know, because no, they're fucking crazy, okay? What they want is a mansion and a yacht, okay? They're not gonna settle for, oh, you mean I'm, you know, mentally crippled and I have to live in a cell, essentially? And I have to have my life monitored? Oh, I don't want to do that. That's no fun. Of course you don't want to do that, but fuck you. Okay, that's the way it works. All right, the world is just not your toilet. Yeah. I mean, it should be a condition of them being allowed to say, you know, no thank you. Should be that they at least, you know, figure out some way to, you know, do their imposing less imposingly. But I mean, that's nice. This isn't going to work. I mean, it's not working, clearly. And it's not an unserious problem. And it just seems like no one's doing anything rational about it. Which is maybe a rational right-to-die policy. I mean, maybe many of these people would just say, yeah, fuck this living thing. This sucks. Give me a nice, peaceful... Give me a nice few meals, okay? Maybe buy me a hooker and I'll get the fuck out of here. I'll relieve you of the burden of my presence. But something. Yeah. Retard Island? I don't know. Something. There's got to be some better answer than this non-answer. But anyway, politics again. Fuck that. So. I shall punish myself for, you know, injecting politics. All right. So, part of the number one reason why you might argue that you're winning in life is because you're not losing. Like, there is, again, no clear good. There's just the, I evaded all of these mistakes, okay? I didn't make this mistake and that mistake and all these mistakes in life. And I got lucky, right? I mean, genetically lucky and circumstantially lucky in the sense that, you know, you evaded the plagues. You evaded going to the cholera party. You evaded some sort of being, you know, some sort of just walking down the street and getting hit by a brick. You avoided lots of negatives, some by just chance luck and some by the fact that you lived a more disciplined life and, you know, protected yourself. You bought insurance and whatnot, blah, blah, blah. You did certain things. Not that buying insurance is a good idea. Don't pretend I think that's true. But anyway, you got lucky and that's, you know. And so you have this impression, okay, that, yeah, it all works out just great because it worked out for me. All right, well, that's kind of not very smart. So the argument would be is that you really do have to imagine, well, what if you actually had to pay these extra prices? And how much of a price would you pay? So, I mean, the average blighted life, you know, if we could put the two things and just say, here's a 50% division of the human experience, and half the people are on this more positive side and half the people are on the more negative side, something like that, however you want to describe that half, 4 billion over here and the 4 billion over here. Well, if you're over in this side, would you really want to live a life on that side? Would you, okay, if you had the choice to live another life after your death, would you say, sure, I'll go ahead and be one of them? I mean, it's better than nothing. Would you really say that? Yeah. Would you? So it's another question to pose to somebody. I mean, would you live a 25% more diminished life, 50% more diminished, 90% more diminished? Do you want to be one of those homeless people? Do you really want to live that life, you know, with the open sores and all the, you know, stinking and being despised, and all of that crap, and being crazy to boot, to not having much working in your brain, you know, being compelled by a bunch of psychological damage to go pick up dirty cans and shit and put them in a bucket. I mean, do you really want to live that life? I mean, you think that's profitable? So, because it's intrinsically valuable and great to be alive, It doesn't have to have any quality to that definition. It can be in any state and you're still going to say, I want it in some sort of rational way. I mean, I'd argue you're just nuttier than the, can picker-upper. But whatever. That's the argument that needs to be made. But again, you have to know who you're arguing with. So that's part of the argument is, I've always stated that's what sort of makes the whole thing just such a difficult project, is because you can't write to a person. You have to write to everyone. And there's all kinds of there's just too many people with too many narrow little triggering buttons. And it's very difficult not to offend them or not to transgress against some kind of, they just won't listen once you say something positive about a certain thing. They just can't hear anything more anymore. They're too distracted by, you can't say that. That's not true. It stops there. So you always have to argue these more fundamental arguments, it's like if you want to believe a fetus is has a soul and it's this really handy, capable kind of organism, and it's just, endowed with all kinds of special features and things that make it so much more valuable than, say, a pig fetus. That's your prerogative. But do you really think you have the evidence to tell everybody else they have to think so too? I mean, that they have to invest in your judgment? So you'll actually vote against and say, other people must believe what I believe. I mean, they must behave as if they believed what I believe. You really don't understand the whole concept of, you really can't prove that, can you? You really can't establish that as the truth. So why are you imposing something you can't establish as a truth? You can't defend it. And you're going to tell other people their brain is invalid. They're not allowed to have their own opinion. I mean, that's just fucking so rude. It's breaking the rules. Of legitimate function. You're not going to have a civilization if people can do that kind of horse shit. Laws should be necessary, and the necessity should be well established, as it should be proven. So, I mean, some questions just aren't legitimately yours to answer for other people. But anyway, so that's probably enough of a video. I keep sliding into politics, which I don't want to do that. But I already did it, so I already violated the rule. So anyway, but that's part of the argument is going to be getting past. I guess the politics is where all the triggers are. So that's where it's dangerous just because it triggers. So you have to try to talk about it without saying the word capitalism or communism. You have to try to talk about it without using any of the trigger words, which, just makes the whole thing difficult and unpleasant. But anyway, it's already difficult and unpleasant. Oh, hurt my back. Anyway, it's just the little minor aggravations in life. Oh, I mean, they're enough just to say fuck it. it's just not. Yeah. It's not worth it. Anyway, so we'll call that a first video. Book of Life. I don't know. It's not a great title, but we'll do it anyway, maybe. We'll get to adding to this meager beginning about where the argument needs to go, or how it should go, or how it should be structured. And I don't know if I did much of that here. I mean, there are some standard bits. The Benatar, zero sum, negative. It's a negative game. It's not a positive game. We're just running from death. We're not running to life. Blah, 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 blah. We're running from the traps. We're spending all our time. All the motion is about evading and avoiding. None of the motion is about actually saying, I need to be somewhere. It's just about avoiding being the places that you know are no good. So anyway, so that's probably enough of a statement there. And such. So, till the next time, and such. This has been a DoNotGod.com video presentation. And Google is evil. And should be, should be disenfranchised, demonopolized, broken into so many little tiny pieces that they're all easy to squish. Something like that, anyway.